Welcome back to the Rural Roundup, hosted by me, Kerry Hammond. This show is produced in association with the Scottish Government. On today's episode, I'm joined by George Chalmers, Robert Ramsey, and Tiffany Stevenson, who discuss the recent bout of wet weather and the implications of this on our agricultural businesses. We also talk about beef enterprise efficiencies. I'm later joined by Sasha Grierson, Principal Consultant at SAC Consulting and Project Lead for the Scottish Farm Business Survey, commissioned by the Scottish Government.
Tiffany, how are things going in the Borders?
Yeah, things are good in the Borders. We're busy doing IACs at the moment, and I seem to have a lot of farmers commenting on the weather whenever they come in. But hopefully things are looking up. How are you doing, Robert?
Yeah, same, exact same. IACs, slurry store applications, and certainly a bit of counselling job on the go at the moment. There's a lot of people in a difficult place, but also there's a lot of reasons to be positive as well about where the industry's at. So yeah, I'm certainly enjoying IACs this year. I think we've got the systems going pretty well, and we're getting more time with people rather than more time with the system. So it's going well. George, how's things? Are you good up north?
Yeah, we're working away through IACs. Weather's obviously an issue. People are desperate to get going. But, you know, as people keep reminding me, it was second half of April before most people got sowing last year. So we've been here before. We've just had a very long winter of rain, really. I think that's preying in people's minds.
Yeah, it's getting pretty boring, isn't it? But I think it's important we keep that in mind. This time last year, I think in this area this time last year, it was just beginning to get good. And for your area, it was another week before it started to get good again.
Yeah, so,
This is certainly nothing new. Tiffany, is there much drilling done in the Borders? Is it anything done at all?
There's very, very little done. There's a few people have managed to get bits and pieces in, but they're very few and far between at the moment. I know there's still people who are still hoping to get some ploughing done, and there's definitely people waiting patiently to try and get some fertiliser put on and some spraying done. And I do feel sorry for the people who've got potatoes as well, because they've not been able to get on with anything yet. So it is just a waiting game at the moment, but I can see that when it does clear up, there's going to be a very big rush and a lot of long days.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think I've ever seen it before where every sector is affected equally. You know, normally there's, you know, for us, or in our area, there's a lot of beef, sheep and dairy guys, quite a lot of arable guys, and normally somebody's having an okay time. At the moment, certainly in the livestock world, prices are all reasonable. Prices are all, you know, beef and sheep are flying, and dairy's coming better than it was. There's lots of positive stuff, but the weather has just put a floor on the whole thing for everybody, and the arable guys can't get moving, the dairy guys can't get moving, the sheep guys are going through hell, really, and the beef guys are stuck in. So it's interesting to see it. And also, I think, what's winter crop?
To be honest, I think up here, we've always been quite fortunate with hard rain, but nothing like what they had in the Central Belt in Angus. Winter crops generally got established well and have come through the winter looking quite well. And they're not any further behind than you'd normally expect, despite the pretty poor spring so far. I mean, oilseed rape is pretty much point of flowering. Everything's looking quite reasonable. So I think, yeah, what is there is decent.
Down here in the Borders, there's definitely yellow fields beginning to appear. I think what we also forget when we keep complaining about the rain and how wet it is, I think we forget how mild it's been as well. It has been warm, which has allowed the crops to keep growing.
Yeah. Day length kicks in as well. It's amazing that just the days getting longer just is enough just to keep things going as well. So what is in the ground's not bad, but of course it's getting the spring crop into the ground. It's becoming a worry for certainly those guys with a lot of area. And what I think I'm noticing when I'm driving about is that most arable guys, they're ploughed up to date and they're fine. But it's the mixed guys who maybe are calving cows or lambing ewes, they've still got ploughing to be done and such like. So their workload is going to be you know, something's got to give there sort of at some point in time. They concentrate on the livestock, and then the arables, their barley just gets in later and later. So there's a lot of juggling to be done at some point.
But I think with the livestock guys, there's a bit of juggling and actually changing of plans. People who had a grass field they were going to take out, they've decided just to leave it in. If they're going to do some reseeding, they've decided just not to do it. And they're starting to try and make decisions of what they can not do this spring, just to allow them time to do what they need to do properly.
I had a conversation with a dairy farmer the other day who was lamenting that he couldn't get his spring wheat in and is now thinking about putting maize in. So, you know, you can change. Obviously, that's dependent on the weather changing pretty radically fairly soon. But there are always other options. And the likes of those reseeds and things, Tiffany, you can easily go. A spring reseed can be replaced with a summer or autumn reseed. There's always options there. And I think that's the beauty of for our job, is we get to see everyone's problems. We get to see all that's happening out there. And I do feel sorry and worry for farmers who only get to see their own issue. You know, they only get to see the problems that they've got and dwell on them. Whereas I know the issues we've got at home, but I also see all of the other people with similar issues, different issues, bigger issues. And it just gives it a bit of perspective. And I think I think for me, the best thing to do at the moment is, if you're feeling down about something, is actually to pick up the phone and speak to neighbours or speak to other people and realise that actually we're all in the same boat. Perhaps it's a boat we need at the moment, but you know, we are all in the same boat. We've all got the same issues and we've all been here before. That's the other thing.
I think it's also worth remembering that it's not even just Scotland that's struggling. I had a farmer in this morning and he's just got back from France. And apparently in France, they've literally been underwater for 5 months and it's only just started drying up again. So maybe we'll just be round the corner and we'll start drying up.
I think that's important to remember that, as I said, that we're probably not too bad yet. And there's probably not many people up in the Northeast that are thinking about revising plans just yet, unlike maybe down in the borders and such like. But you go even across the border into England and they are getting late now for sowing. They are having to change their plans because they're certainly down the east side, if they start sowing now, the crops are not going to put down the roots and they'll just dry out and, well, they just won't get the yield. Simple as that.
We're also seeing, you know, in England, the policy world has changed and there's certainly a lot of people who are opting out of spring barley and opting into cover crop mixes and other options through Elms or whatever their scheme is. And you know, that's becoming really obvious in terms of, you know, getting hold of spring barley seed is getting really straightforward again. You know, there is seed becoming available. Plans certainly further south are changing. And I don't know, is that a concern, I suppose, but it's also an opportunity for some people to hold their plans up here as well.
Yeah, definitely. And we've even seen the markets changing. Okay, so other factors have changed that, but the grain price has crept up in the last few weeks again. And even that is enough just to give a wee boost to people. Yes, they kind of get sowing, but most of the malt and barley contracts are based in futures in some way or another. And the fact that it's rising, it just gives everyone just that wee boost as well.
I think as well, seeing the lamb prices at the moment, that's definitely something to be really positive about. They really have risen rapidly. So I think that's just something, as people are struggling to lamb, at least if they've got last year's lamb still there that need to get rid of, there is a bit of a positive there.
It's a blessing and a curse though, Tiffany. We've got to detach ourselves from the lamb price when it comes to losses. You know, you get some of those days. And lambing always feels, you know, lambing's never as good or as bad as it feels. You know, if it feels bad, it's usually a bit better. And if it feels really good, it's usually not quite as good as you think. But we have to be able to detach ourselves. That wee lamb that was, you know, the third one in a set of triplets that died in the rain, we can't view that as potentially £180 and start counting them as you're putting them in a bag on a bad day or something. You know, it has to be some kind of disconnect there. Otherwise, we could drive ourselves mad.
And who knows what the lamb price will be this time next year.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a client of mine who's just come out of sheep, just about to retire, and he was saying, basically, in his view, of probably 60 years of sheep production, he said, you either get a good lambing and a poor price, or a poor lambing and a good price. And it just seems to follow itself off. So, you know, I think while we're lambing sheep, don't think too much. You know, I think what we're doing today, think what's, you know, how we can do things a bit better today, and don't dwell on it too much.
No, you can't think about things like that too much. You just got to get on with it, really. And I think that's what, despite everything that's thrown at them, farmers are remarkably resilient. They're a resilient bunch, and yeah, they have to be. They have to be to take whatever the weather throws at them. But yeah, thankfully, markets are keeping everything good at the moment. I mean, up here, cattle, people are selling cattle, and now they're bemoaning the fact that it's far too expensive maybe to go and replace them with stores, which is always helping the suckler cow guy as well. Everything is I'm not going to say it's buoyant at the moment, but everything's better than it's been for some time.
I think if it wasn't for the weather, I think I would be viewing this as positive a time as I've farmed in. You know, I think we've got, well, certainly, so I'm store cattle and fat lamb producing, and, you know, we've had a fair wind. We've had a good go at it. It's just the fact that Mother Nature's come along and kind of scuppered us a wee bit just now. But the longer range forecast is changing, which is good, and there's a spring to come. You know, there definitely is.
Yeah, and you know, we saw that over the weekend up here that, you know, it was amazing how just even a decent day, sun shining, bit of wind, and that was people out with the Cambridge rollers going in front of the drill. And yeah, it looked maybe darker than you'd like it, but it was definitely workable and definitely, you know, sowable yesterday. So there was a few folk going yesterday. It's amazing how quickly it can turn around at this time of the year.
Well, hopefully it does turn around quickly.
I think for context, it's important to fling in the fact there was no Cambridge rollers moving in Ayrshire last week, for sure.
There was none in the borders either. It's okay. We did see a sprayer out after a really nice day. They were out the following day because it must have just dried up enough they could at least get onto the field. I find when people are coming in to do their IX form, I think conversations keep turning to the whole farm plan, because this time next year when we're doing IX, people are going to have to confirm that they've got at least two of the five options for the whole farm plan. So there's a carbon audit, biodiversity audit, soil sampling, animal health and welfare plan, and an integrated pest management plan. And actually, I've been pleasantly surprised that a lot of people already have three or four of those different options, which I think has given them a bit of a boost that actually they've already started doing some of these things because they've been in an assurance scheme or have taken an interest in something along the way. So it is definitely something people need to keep on their radar.
I find it quite funny. It sounds like a very dramatic change. You know, it sounds like something that's a whole farm plan sounds like a sea change. And for many it is. You know, for some guys who've not engaged in some of this stuff in the past, it is a big change. But for a lot of people who are farm assured, who are, you know, farm assured for a beef and sheep, dairy, cereals, the health plan bit's done, the integrated pest management plan bit's done. If you wanted soil sampling grant funding through PSF, you did a carbon audit. So you've already got four of them. You know, for those who've kicked on and embraced the opportunities that were there in the last few years, what we need to do is just what we're doing next year is just formalising what you've already done.
I think as well, it's worth remembering that there is still the funding this year for the carbon audit and the soil analysis. So even if people haven't embraced it up till now, there is the opportunity this year to get funding to help get those two elements.
Yeah. Yeah, when we're having conversations, as Robert said, there are a lot of people who haven't engaged. You know, some people just won't do a carbon audit. They've got their own views and such like. But we've always said, I suppose, it's coming one way or another, and that's what's come to pass. Soil sampling, and soil sampling really, in most cases, it's a bit of a no-brainer, really. But those that are farm assured, it's going to be a much easier process than what they thought with this whole farm plan. And I think it's a lot of these things we've seen it coming. We're preparing for sustainable farming, and we knew that was going to lead to something. So we're just seeing that come to fruition, really.
The other thing that's come to light in the last few weeks is the 410 day calving interval onto the beef calf claim. So, you know, it's an important change for the suckler industry. You know, it's important to drive us forward to be more efficient. It's an important change that we need to start making, is to improve the fertility in the suckler herd. And really, just as you said, Tiffany, the PSF funding is there also for funding a semen testing of bulls. So now's the time to have a look at your bull for a spring calving herd. Let's find out where your bulls are at, because your fertility, or your herd's fertility rather, has never been more important than it is now. Any slip up when it comes to bulling and things is going to have an impact financially on you, not just in terms of your enterprise, but also in terms of your subsidy check as well. So I would definitely encourage you to have that conversation with your vet.
I feel like there's definitely been a lot of mixes and responses to the full 110 days. And interestingly, I almost feel like those who are less keen on it are the ones that have a spring and an autumn calving, and have ones that do slip and don't see the problem in it. But I can see the benefits of having a tighter calving. And I think people who do have a 6 or 8 week calving, that they have the same calving every year, they're quite happy because they know they're already set up for it.
I think what we need to do is see what the actual guidance is going to be. We've got the kind of rough outline of what the scheme looks like, but we don't know the inner workings of the guidance. So is it as broad a brush as it sounds, or is there, you know, options within it to make changes to your business? So it will remain to be seen, and certainly it's one to keep an eye on, and certainly something I'm sure we'll be discussing with Stevie Thompson and others going forward on this podcast, because it's going to be important over the next year or several years to come. But the thing I think we need to keep in mind is, financially, the beef calf scheme, the loss of that beef calf scheme, is only an indicator of the rest of the money that you've lost by carrying a cow round, or, you know, moving a cow from spring to autumn. All of these things have a big financial cost. All the beef calf scheme is doing is putting a price on it that we can actually see in terms of pound notes. We don't see all those other hidden costs. But the fact of the matter is, the suckler industry is under pressure financially, always has been under pressure financially, and we do all need to step up for our own benefit. We do all need to step up to the plate here and improve our fertility and herd performance.
It is going to see a bit of a move away from the mentality that as long as she produces a calf at the end of the day, all's rosy in the garden. But it's going to focus her mind a wee bit more.
It'll be great to see what the full guidance is going to be, which is due to be released in the summer, so it's not that far away. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out and what all the details are.
Yeah, and I know for a lot of people, summer will feel like a long way away at the moment. A lot happening, but just as we were saying, you know, keep yourself right, keep your chin up. Life's good, and the weather is turning. And for a lot of people listening, summer will feel like a long time away. But it's literally, you know, we're just round the corner. We're nearly there. We can feel it. Days are longer. Things are milder. We just need a bit of dry weather. And I've no doubt in a few months' time, we'll be talking in this podcast about droughts and about, you know, hot weather and heat stress and things. So there are changes to come for sure. So if we all just keep our chins up, stay positive, and get through this next few weeks.
Sasha tells us the latest findings from the Scottish Farm Business Survey and provides some figures for industry performance. I'm joined by Sasha Grierson, Principal Consultant at SAC Consulting and the project lead for the Scottish Farm Business Survey commissioned by the Scottish Government, Hey, Sasha, how are you?
Well, thanks, Kerry.
Thanks so much for coming on the Rural Roundup today. I guess a sensible place to start, Sasha, would be tell me, what is the Scottish Farm Business Survey?
The Scottish Farm Business Survey is a granular economic analysis of over 400 Scottish farms across the traditionally supported sectors in agriculture in Scotland. Not only do we produce the economic analysis, but we also produce an environmental analysis in the form of greenhouse gas emissions statistics too.
And is this something that's done every year?
Yes, it's an annual commission on behalf of Scottish Government. It represents 65% of the agricultural land in Scotland. Most importantly, it represents about 95% of Scottish agriculture's standard output. But quite interestingly, it only represents just under half the people who are actually employed in Scottish agriculture. And that's because there's a large number of holdings where people work part-time or less than part-time on Scottish farms. Importantly, all the results that are published in the Scottish Farm Business Survey are adjusted for inflation. Inflation has kicked off recently in recent years, and the adjustment for inflation allows us to compare results year on year. And that's a really important observation on these statistical outputs, because these statistics are published a little bit behind the curve. So this year's publication just came out at the end of March, and you can find the link to the government's publication in the show notes. And it's an analysis of businesses up to the end of May 2023. So next year's publication will have this year's data in it, for example. Interestingly, people sometimes say to me, they say, why do these results matter so much? And really, this project's output is used by Scottish Government for economic modelling of the impact of future policy change on the traditionally supported sectors in Scottish agriculture. So government uses this data to help it predict policy scenarios and the economic impacts of those. So that's why these numbers matter. They're also, the data is gathered according to a standard methodology that's employed the whole way across the country. So we have a highly standardised and objective data set gathered by a team of people who are all trained in a specific manner.
Results of the survey, therefore, would be incredibly robust.
That's it. The outputs are very robust. And also the data is very heavily used across a range of Scottish Government statistical outputs.
What were some of the key findings from the survey results that you have just published?
Up to the end of May 2023, the state of Scottish farming would appear to be in a pretty robust and healthy state. The average farm business income, which is the kind of statistical reported variable, but we can call it net profit, is at a 10-year high of just over £69,000. This does include the effect of support payments. And without support, the average farm business income or net profit is still well ahead of last year at nearly £23,000. Now, that is an average Scottish farm. And as we all know, there is no such thing as an average Scottish farm. Every farm is unique. And it's collapsing the income across the different sectors. But it's an important headline figure that gives Scottish Government a kind of snapshot insight into the state of Scottish farming PLC. In effect. The other key finding was that input costs rose on average by 12% over and above inflation. And that's an interesting finding, because we always think that when we're running our businesses that things just cost more because of inflation. But actually there's something else going on there, that the price of things is getting more expensive over and above inflation. What that actually tells us about the agricultural economy, I'm not too sure, but it does certainly chime with the anecdotal reports that people have of, you know, stuff, everything seems so expensive, things are rising so fast, and that's over and above the effect of inflation. Having said that, although inputs costs rose on average by 12%, the agricultural output actually rose much further beyond that. And again, this is on an average Scottish farm by about 20%. These positive findings are almost entirely driven by large increases in the results for general cropping, cereal and dairy farms, all of whom had really outstanding years last year up to May 2023.
So that sounds like, though that key finding of input costs rising above inflation, which I agree that is a very interesting finding to come out of the survey, it sounds that the findings overall are painting for those sectors quite a positive picture. Earlier in today's podcast, we heard Robert George and Tiffany discussing specifically beef efficiencies and beef enterprises. So what does it look like for livestock farms in the Scottish Farm Business Survey?
Well, it's quite a different picture for livestock farms. When we collapse the different livestock farming types, there are four different types across different land types, LFA and lowland, and cattle and sheep farms, we find that livestock farms and average livestock farms, their farm business income or net profit is only around £24,000 per year. And that's including support payments. So it's a less exciting picture. But as usual, the survey within the government survey publication, there's some deep dive data tables, which actually tell a much more nuanced story about the breadth of profitability across different farming types. And when we look into those for livestock farms, we begin to see some interesting findings. One of them for me always is that between 20 and 30% of livestock farms make no profit whatsoever, even with support payments. And this is quite a stubborn statistic that keeps rolling forward year on year. We don't know if they're the same farms year on year, but there's the same proportion of farms. And that's really acting as a kind of drag on the overall results for the sector. So within any one farming type, you can have really well-performing farms and really poor-performing farms. And that can be for a range of different reasons. But in these livestock farms, we have this group who don't appear to make any money even with support payments. The other thing that you find when you dig into the data tables and you have a look, livestock farms had much higher agricultural-related input costs, both fixed and variable. So although their agricultural output rose in value, it wasn't by enough to offset the combined effects of increased input costs, but also some small but significant decreases in direct payments, between 1 and 6% across the different farming types. So it appears that livestock farms are being hit by a bit of a double whammy here. They're struggling to cover the rise in input costs, but they're also being not quite getting as much in direct payments as they're used to. However, that was up to the end of May. And since May 23, we've seen sustained and significantly increased prices for livestock of all types in the marketplace. So by the time we get around to publishing and talking about these statistics next year, we imagine that some of these figures might look quite different. The other interesting finding that we found was to do with the overall net worth of Scottish farms. Again, we dig around in the data tables to find some of these interesting figures. There was no doubt that in 2022, we saw a significant increase in land values, and those values would have been used as the basis for this set of results. And so we see the overall net worth of our farms in our survey increasing from 1.7 to 1.8 million. And this is probably due to that significant surge in land prices. Now, in 2023, when we look at land values, that rise in land values has certainly tailed off. And certainly the other interesting finding out with the survey for this year is that the market for land for trees, plantable land that's relatively accessible for trees, has decreased in value quite significantly by about 15 to 25% across the market. And so we may see that net worth begin to come down or at least tail off in our statistics.
Can you draw any rationale for why the sort of forestry land may have decreased in value?
That's a really good question. There's a few different reasons that contribute to that. Post-COVID, there was a real scramble for land and developers to plant up large areas for trees bid the prices up, there's no doubt. And there were changes in the Woodland Carbon Code that made it more difficult to access that funding for carbon credits, but also in 2023, but also there was a kind of legacy of land to be, there was a land bank to be developed by developers. And so a lot of that land that was bought in 2022 was kind of marginal grazing land for livestock, and it was also inaccessible places. And so the value of that land has fallen back quite significantly. There was also some disruption to the reputation of the carbon markets, and that inevitably, I think, spooked investors and actually put a bit of a brake on the demand for land.
Sasha, as you know, I work as part of the food and enterprise team, and a lot of the clients that we work with are diversified businesses. So whether that be food and drink diversification, rural tourism type diversification, all the way through to sort of renewable energy turbines, etc. What does the Farm Business Survey tell us about diversification?
It tells us some quite interesting things about diversification. Government have been tracking this for the last 10 years. We have a five-year match sample of about 350 farms. That means there are 350 farms that have diversified activity or don't have diversified activity that have been in the survey all that time over the last 5 years. And it continues to show that farms that have diversification activity continue to have a higher farm business income. So, for example, this year, the farm business income in the diversified sample was £103,000. And the non-diversified farms averaged a farm business income of about £65,000. So what does that mean? Correlation is not causation, but it does tell a story. We don't know the breakdown of the farm types. There's no denying that a general cropping farm or a cereal farm with those high levels of profitability over the last few years may have more money to invest in diversifications. However, the diversifications that the government has listed are fairly modest things. They're rents for a telephone mast, renting out a shed for caravan storage. They're doing up a shed to rent out to a neighbour for B&Bing their cattle. These are not, you know, investing £1 million in a wedding venue. That's not the survey's job. The survey's job is to track agricultural output whilst acknowledging that diversification exists. So given that those are quite modest things, and they're fairly modest sums of money, what's going on in these businesses that makes them grasp the opportunity to add that extra few thousand pounds into their tin and just be nimble in their approach and keep doing it? You know, there are some farms in this longitudinal group that have three or four diversification activities. Each thing just brings in a bit extra, and that adds up to an average of 9% of their net profit on these farms. Now, one can argue that that's not make or break if you're a big dairy farm earning £250,000 profit a year. But for the smaller business, that can be, that's that extra money that you have in your business, working for your business year on year. So that's a definite takeaway on the diversification story.
It's really interesting that you're potentially identifying there something in mindset or approach of the people who are running these businesses.
It could be. The other thing that I'm always conscious of is that for some businesses, they have opportunity as well. So they are in an area where that needs a mobile phone mast. They are in an area where they have an A road very close by so that people can tow their caravan for storage. For somebody on a hill in a remote area of Scotland, that's going to be a bit more difficult. So there is, yes, mindset, definitely. Here's an opportunity. Let's take it and let's take three of them. And, you know, each one gives me £5,000 a year. Great. Or even £2,000 a year. But there's also something about access to opportunity. And that's the other edge of the seesaw, I think.
So we have an audience of farmers, crofters, landowners in Scotland. What should they do with the Scottish Farm Business Survey? Why do they need to know about it?
Gosh, why do they need to know about it? Well, to be conscious that it exists. It's there to serve government. Government is changing its policy, agricultural policy. And these statistics help inform that. And so in some ways, I've got some cooperators who are members of Young Farmers, and they're quite eloquent about the fact that they want to communicate with government and give them the true economic picture of Scottish farming, and they see their participation in the survey as a way of delivering direct objective evidence about their data. And they feel that it's actually, they're not worried about giving government their data. They know that we keep their anonymity, guard that very closely, but that actually this is a way that they can actually communicate directly with government. And I think that's quite a refreshing way to look at it. The other main output from the survey is the national group average set of benchmarks. So what we do once government has got the data, we set to and we produce what we call Whole Farm Benchmarks Tool, which is published in the FAS website. And this is basically a national group average for each particular farming type. I think there's 8 farming types: dairy, general cropping, the various livestock farms. And so you can, as a business, you can compare yourself, your farm economic performance, with the economic performance of a group of farms similar in size and type to your own. So if you're more than 2/3 of your agricultural output comes from beef cattle farming, either suckler beef or finishing beef, you can actually compare your business figures to, I think it's about 90 other specialist beef farms, and you can also see whether you're in the top 25% for your various different economic figures. We divide costs into fixed and variable costs. We offer you farm gross margins, and it's quite, one can argue that it's quite a crude tool, but it actually helps you start the conversation. And I think that's what's really interesting. You can measure the amount of money, the percentage of your output that you spend on concentrates against a group national average. If you're way off there, you can begin to go, maybe I need to think about that. What's going on in my business that raised my costs so significantly above a group national average, or even the top 25%? So it's a high level way of comparing your farm's business with an objective data set. And benchmarking, businesses that benchmark automatically do better just by looking at their numbers. So it's time to, you know, get out the accounts and compare them against group national average.
It's that old adage, isn't it? What's measured is managed, and what's
you know, this stuff is really dull. You can just repeat it ad nauseum, but it actually makes the difference. What gets measured gets managed. These things are cliches because cliches are true. And there has been interesting behavioral research that has looked at the fact that people that just look at their business and actually, you know, have the conversation about benchmarking end up doing better economically long term.
And that benchmark tool, which we'll link in the show notes, that is available to any farmer, anyone. You don't have to have taken part in the survey.
Absolutely not. It's a free resource. It's for everyone in industry to use. So it's not just there for farmers. It's there for everyone in industry to use. I might add that it's one of the very few, it's the only national group average data set available for benchmarking. So there will be publications coming out later on this month, and there'll be a webinar next month through the FAS program. So look out for that and sign up.
So all of that stuff is free and available even to farmers and crofters who haven't taken part and actually provided mm-hmm. their data to the survey, which is amazing and generous. But what about farmers and crofters who would like to get involved with giving data to the Scottish Farm Business Survey?
Well, thanks very much, Kerry. We're always on the hunt for volunteers to the survey. Again, another thing I feel like I say ad nauseum and on repeat. However, it's not just all one-way traffic. It's just not all about giving data to government. We guarantee your anonymity. Your business is only known to government as a farm code. It's voluntary. And in return for your participation, we'll probably ask you for about 2 to 3 hours of your time, plus a link to your digital farm accounts. We would probably want to come and do a farm visit and set you up in the survey, get your farm onto our balance sheet. And in return, you get a whole farm carbon audit done in AgriCalc, which you can use for grant purposes. You get the farm business report, which is a granular management accounting analysis of up to 3 years of comparable data in your business. This is quite interesting because over time, as you stay in the survey, you gather up to three years worth of data, and you can see trends in your business performance. The other thing is that as farmers and small businesses, we often only get back our tax accounts from our accountants. Your management accounts are where the real juice is where the really interesting information is. So we give you that management accounting report. And then we also, at the end of the year, we give you a performance benchmark report. So we measure you up against your group average. So if you're a cereal farm, we'll give you an individual performance report. So we do your benchmarking for you. It's all free. We have a fantastic team of incredibly nice and sensitive farm business analysts who will come and help gather the data and take up as little of your time as is humanly possible.
I mean, that sounds like a no-brainer to me, Sasha. We'll pop details of how people can find out more and potentially sign up in the show notes. Thank you so much for giving us some key findings and headlines from the Scottish Farm Business Survey today, Sasha. We really appreciate your time, and I'll be looking forward to the webinar in May.
Thanks, Kerry. That's great.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Rural Roundup. We'll see you back here again on the 22nd of May with our next episode. This episode was presented by me, Kerry Hammond. Featured guests, George Chalmers, Robert Ramsey, Tiffany Stevenson and Sasha Grierson. This episode was edited by Cameron Walk and was executive produced by myself, Kerry Hammond.
The Farm Advisory Service Podcast. Audio advice on livestock, crops and soils, environment, rural business, and more. Brought to you in association with the Scottish Government.